No, no, no. What we do is we listen to the answers and gain insights. That's what we're looking for.
It's time for The Growth Show. This week, we'll be talking about living by Google and dying by Google. We'll hear the story of a business that built its entire existence on Google search, and then one day, the carpet got pulled out from underneath. Find out about that and lots of things you can be doing to improve the performance of your website. All of that and more today on The Growth Show.
Oftentimes, it's the ones that are successful loved what they did so they could persevere when it got really tough. And the ones that didn't love it, quit.
I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to the Growth Show, episode 7. The show where we help you grow in your business. David Johnson here. Glad to have you listening again. Rod Thompson, good to have you here.
Rodney.
Always good to be here.
We call him Rod, though. 30-year veteran journalist, messaging guru, not just for businesses these days, but also for political candidates, mm-hmm. because you have a nose for a good story and good messaging. I enjoy that. And Josh Muccio, the kid, as we call you. How are you?
I'm well.
We're going to talk about you today.
I'm here.
Yeah. It's good to have you here. And you're awake, too, because I've seen you down a cup and a half of coffee, so I think it's safe to say.
I need to finish the rest of this, because I feel like I'm 90% there.
All right, 90% is better than zero. So, but we are going to talk about you today. We've got a great story today, and I do want to say this before we get into the story. Rod, I think we need to do an episode with you where we really talk about your nose for the story. Because storytelling is so critical these days for businesses trying to be successful and maybe set themselves apart. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I do agree. I mean, it's a critical element, I think, for a company to, exactly as you say, set themselves apart. And it's one that they often miss. And the reason they miss it is they don't realize they're sitting on top of such a great story. I've said for probably decades that everybody has a story to tell, just most people don't actually know how to tell their story.
Oh, yeah. Email marketing is about telling your story. Video, if you embed that onto your website, that's about telling your story. Your blog
right.
should be telling
right.
your story.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, step yep. one, know your story.
Know your story.
We got to start the podcast over.
And step two might be hire a pro to help you tell it.
There you go. That's right. And, you know, it's
shameless
great
plug.
When you do have a pro who can smell the story, because a lot of times we don't think of ourselves as interesting, right? It's like you said, everybody has a story to tell, but a lot of times it's about finding someone who can ask the right questions, because everybody really is interesting if you know how to ask the right questions.
I don't think I've ever come across somebody at a social event or networking or whatever where I didn't talk to them for a little while and think, oh, that's really interesting. Some element of what they've told me about themselves I found really interesting.
So did you learn to ask these kinds of questions? Is this like part of journalism school?
No, it's part of journalism life. Journalism school was a complete waste of money.
Sounds like a marketing degree.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, I love Michigan State and all, but they left me utterly unprepared for the world of journalism. So everything I learned in journalism, basically, I learned as a practicing journalist, really, with tough editors.
Mm. Yeah, let's not get started on school.
Okay, it's a deal.
Oh, but we're going to talk about your school, because that's where you're...
That is an important element of your story.
Yeah, it is, yeah. All right, so why don't we pick up the story? So the reason we're telling your story today, Josh, is because you had a business that blew up, and we could even say probably owed its existence to a certain degree anyway, to Google search.
Yeah.
Right? You had Google traffic, and then you also had a moment where all of that free traffic that Google was giving you disappeared. And wow. And you'd built your business around it. So mm-hmm. a lot of business owners, I think, can relate. I mean, that we've got people listening who would really love to see Google contribute a lot of traffic to their businesses, or maybe some are having that happen already. But what would happen if all of a sudden overnight your traffic disappeared? Mm-hmm. What would you do to recover? So I'm excited about learning more about your story. And I've heard little bits and pieces that we've even shared some of it here on the podcast, but I'm excited about this today. So Rod, you're going to take the journalism approach today, right?
Yeah.
Get to see Rod in action.
Yeah, exactly.
In action.
Everybody
sure.
Live let's and critique in the questioning here.
Yes.
No. What we do is we listen to the answers and gain insights. That's what we're looking for.
Write that down. That's a quotable.
I'm going to write that.
Tweet that.
We might even use that as the opener for our show today.
As you've already pointed out, Josh has actually two stories in his first company story. And one of them, he starts off with this initial fantastic growth. But quickly, if you can tell the story of how you got the idea for your company, because I think people might just find that interesting.
Yeah.
And then move on to that and some of the areas where there's some really meaty insights for company owners. But it's very interesting how you got it, because you never want to look past ways to see opportunities to meet a need, to have the opportunity to create a product or a service that could actually be a very successful company.
I just came across this principle this week, and it completely changed the way I look at ideas, and I really like it. It's search for problems and then ask people how you should solve that problem. So you get feedback from the start before you come up with an idea and then try to push that idea that may not even be necessary.
But that's an important point. A lot of people release a product or create a service around something, and they have no idea if anybody's even going to want it.
If there's any market at all
for it. Exactly. Yep.
Test the market, validate it. Yep. So for me, I didn't really do any validation. It was a school project, had the opportunity to actually pitch to some investors in my senior year.
Like Shark Tank style.
Shark Tank style. And it was real money, but we had to turn a profit in like 3 months, which is like, I mean, that's not realistic at all.
Yeah, the real sharks would never demand that.
No. I mean, they would like that, but sure, they wouldn't demand it. But I bought my wife an iPhone, I think it was an iPhone 3GS at the time. This has been 2010. And she broke it. And by the graces of someone at the Apple store, they fixed it for her for free. But I thought, I was like, if she wasn't a girl, if she wasn't pretty, and if it hadn't just been her birthday that she got that, I don't know if he would have. I mean, he kind of had to do it under the table. And like, oh yeah, there's this other broken phone, but it has a good screen, so we're gonna throw that on there for you so you don't cry, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was how it went. And I thought, man, like this would have been like $250, more than what I paid for the phone. And so I thought, maybe I can fix these things, you know, iFixit, some other guides out there had guides.
So you immediately saw an opportunity for a market there.
Yeah, I saw the problem. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't the entrepreneurship guy. I was not going to school for entrepreneurship. I was going into finance, which was very logical. You know, in demand job.
Finance.
Yeah.
In 2010.
It makes sense.
Okay.
Good point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's
different. But you're a college kid. It's okay.
Yeah. It's different. I mean, we're figuring stuff out. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So I bought one off of eBay. I bought a broken phone off of eBay because I figured that was the first thing to do. And then I figured I could fix it and then resell it and make my money back. I about broke that first phone. It was a scary moment. I about totally screwed it up and lost all my money. But anyway, was able to actually sell it. I think I made like $20. So wasn't.
And so this is part of the project at this point, the class project. Or you
I think I was still validating the idea, proving that I could actually fix them.
Right.
Because otherwise, I'd be in trouble if I couldn't actually fix.
Yeah, you
them.
Couldn't offer to fix phones that you can't fix. Exactly. That's a bad business idea.
That would have turned out very poorly.
Right.
So
but you know, most of the entrepreneurs I know have this solid answer when asked if they can do something. Yeah, we can do that.
We can do that.
Sure.
And then you figure it out.
And I had another moment later on too where I said I could do something, but I couldn't actually do it. And then I had to learn how to do it. Whew, that was scary. So basically I pitched the idea because I thought, okay, there's a need here. And there was this moment when I pitched it. It was right after I said, broken phones make girls cry. That was my like attention getter. And then I was picturing.
Which is a great line.
And that's a great story.
Yeah.
That's
so I had everybody's attention right from the, and like everybody was smiling, investors were smiling. I was like, oh, wow. Apparently that went off well. And, you know, the power of PowerPoint and a well crafted tagline, I suppose. Anyway.
I'm making notes here. Make girls cry. Okay, keep going.
And then at one point in time, I asked the audience a question. How many of you know some or have had a phone that was the investor popped in and said, hey, how many people have actually had a broken phone? And like three people raised their hands. And it was like this moment where my entire presentation was just deflated. Mm-hmm. Like you could hear a pin drop in the room.
So that was not a large number of people compared to the number of people in the room. Three out of...
Oh, yeah. Sorry. There were like, it was investors and all of my classmates. So there were like, and some other people who just wanted to hear the pitches because pitches are fun. There was like 60, 70 people in the room.
Right. Oh, okay.
And, right. And so there was, you could hear a pin drop and you could see the investors are like, what's he going to say? And I had a creative moment of genius and I said, but how many of you know someone who broke their phone or has had a damaged phone? And almost everybody raised their hand.
Ooh.
All of a sudden the investors were smiling. Mm-hmm. They wanted to give me more money than I was asking for. They wanted to give me like $1,000 extra. I said, well, I can't actually do anything more in 3 months with your extra $1,000. I was like, I'm full-time in school, blah, blah, blah. So I didn't take the extra money.
You were in college. You were in finance. It's okay. Yeah. We can look past some of these.
But, you know,
youthful indiscretions.
Right. I turned down the money.
You turned down the money. All right. So you get to the point. You've got your business idea. You've got some money from investors. What next?
I basically bought a bunch of phones off of eBay or Craigslist, and then sold them on eBay. There was just kind of a difference in price between the two. Even if they were already fixed, I could sell them.
Part of it, you were just phone flipping.
Yeah, I was phone flipping. Okay. And then I also advertised on Craigslist, just threw up a little ad that said, hey, I fix iPhones for $60. And I got more of those. I had no idea I would, but that started to make most of the money for the business more than the flipping of the phones. And then they released a new version of the phone during this time. And I actually wasn't able to make much of a profit off of the phone flipping idea. Because then all of a sudden the value of my stock, the stock I had in phones was lost.
Inventory. So at what point did you buy the domain name?
Okay. Yeah. I think I worked it into the presentation because I had already purchased it almost to tell my commitment to the idea was that, hey, also I bought the domain name iPadScreenRepair.com because I assumed that the iPad would break and it was rumored they were releasing an iPad. And they were either going to call it the iPad or the iSlate. And somebody else had a website that said iPhoneScreenRepair.com. And I thought, I'll do the same thing for iPads. You know.
So the iPad wasn't even out yet at this point.
Wasn't even out yet. Yeah. And that was, I mean, if you can tell what people are going to be searching for in a couple months and build a product or a landing page or a campaign around that, it's actually a pretty good strategy because Google will see you as being authoritative because mm-hmm. you're the first one to publish around that keyword or topic.
You know, while we're on this topic, this still works today, even if you're thinking about newsjacking. So you, one of the things we advise clients all the time is if you're creating content, find a way to get in front of a story that's out there. We just saw a tweet this morning that I thought was really brilliant about the black and white dress or the gold. It's black and blue, but I think it looked gold and white.
It's black and blue.
All right. So everybody has a different opinion on the color of the dress. We're not going to do that argument. What was brilliant was the tweet from Salvation Army that said, why is it so hard to see black and blue? And they had a woman wearing the dress, but it looked gold and white, and she was bruised up. So it was a Salvation Army
about abuse
jumping on the campaign, right, mm-hmm. to promote awareness of domestic violence or whatever else. That's another example. Now, they did it visually. You can do it with text just by, you know, finding a way for a current news story or even internet meme, as the case may be, that you can jump in front of and relate to your business somehow.
Well, and as I'll tell later in the story, you don't want to buy an exact match domain name anymore. If you were doing what I was doing right back then, you would have your own brand and you'd build a separate page dedicated to iPad screen repair.
This may also explain why Apple didn't, you know, come after you right away for having iPad in your domain name because they hadn't released the product yet.
Good point. And they never did actually come after me. But yeah. At one point in time, I was scared.
Yeah. Well, they might not have a legal leg to stand on because you owned it before they released the product.
Oh, I had never thought of that.
It's an interesting way to approach it. Yep. But anyway. Yeah.
All right. So you launch out. You're shifting now to repairs because the flipping wasn't going to be profitable anymore. So now you're focusing more in on iPhone screen repairs.
Yep. And then the project ended.
You graduate from school.
Yeah.
You go off and
got a job in
finance.
Actually, I laid block for a couple months.
Laid block because that's what all finance majors should do out of college right away.
And then I realized
it's a real job.
Idiot I was being. Like, you got a degree. Go work in that degree. So then I went and got a boring. It was boring for me being in accounting.
Right.
I was in the wrong place.
Right. So that wasn't the job for you. So then you at some point you check back on your domain.
Yeah, it was a year later and You know, I had Google Analytics installed. I don't think I had it installed from the beginning. But if you're listening, you should have Google Analytics installed from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Don't miss that. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look and there's like 200 or 300 people on the website every single day.
Every day.
Yeah. From the across the country.
Right.
For a site that's not being updated at all, there's no fresh
it's
content.
It's just a static dead site.
Static dead site.
People are finding it that frequently.
That doesn't really happen these days anymore, but it happened to me back then. And so I turned it into an e-commerce site. It was a WordPress site, and I think I used, WooCommerce is the name of the, and then people were able to purchase, you know, back then it would have been the original iPad, an iPad screen repair service.
Like a flat fee checkout with a repair.
Yeah. I mean, it was the crappiest, you know, rinky dink way of doing it.
WooCommerce itself is okay, but you didn't really invest a lot in the design.
Didn't know anything about e-commerce. I didn't know, you know, 10% of what I know today.
Had you ever repaired an iPad at this point?
That's
that's coming.
Nope.
Okay, all
never
right.
Repaired an iPad. So, you know, I didn't think that it would immediately yield results.
How much different can the phone be than the pad, right?
Right. I assumed that I could fix it.
Sure.
You know, so at some point in time, you do have to take risks.
So you put this checkout up. You're not sure if anybody's going to do it. And all of a sudden,
within a week, I had 4 iPads coming in. And back in that day, I think it was over $300 to have Apple do it. The parts were more expensive, and
what
competition was like $230 or something like that. There was a lot of profit in that.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Like more than 50%, right. Even after paying.
So right away, you have 4 come in right away, and you have to learn how to actually fix them by that point.
Yeah. Right. And I'm still working at my job. So in the evenings, I'm learning how to fix iPads.
Okay.
Had a couple scary moments. Had a couple mad customers when the iPad didn't look as pretty as it should have, you know, and I tried to do what's right and, you know, refund them and stuff. But they were still mad. They wanted a replacement iPad. And, you know, well, we could go down that road.
Right.
But
at this point, you've got a business that's working. It may not be making huge money, but it's working. And it's entirely based on Google search traffic.
Oh, completely free.
Were you ranking like number one for
number
iPad screen
one for the search term iPad screen repair?
That's nuts.
Yeah.
I had like 0 links to my site other than the social ones that I would set up, you know. Over time, we built links because Google was sending us traffic.
Right.
You know, we had news articles that wrote about us. So we kind of built that up.
All right. So how big did it get at that point doing it that method, just that purely organic search results? You grew about how big were you?
I think between 150K and 200K.
Okay.
And it's part-time for you at this point.
Well, that was the projected, like, no, that would have been after. I'm sorry. So I don't remember how much it was. It was 3 or 4 iPads a week, but it was very shortly after that I got laid off from my accounting job.
Right. Oh, okay. That'll do it.
Which I had hated anyway.
Right.
And we felt like it was there was an opportunity to pursue it. You know, I could collect unemployment for a couple of months. And, you know, while I waited to fill that gap of money, we had a kid on the way, our first kid.
Right.
So my grandma told me I couldn't quit my job because I had a kid
so
coming on.
So you didn't quit it? You were laid off.
So I didn't quit it. I was laid off, which was like a glory. I mean, I actually rejoiced when when I got laid off.
So grandma, I didn't disobey what you said, but
yeah,
here I go.
So then you shifted all of your energies into growing the company.
Yeah. And then within 2 or 3 months, I'd replaced my full-time salary.
All right. So then the company gets up, it's growing. You've hired some help for it.
Yeah. Cause I really sucked it.
Right. And so you hired people that could repair them better while you were looking at the company itself and managing the company. Mm-hmm. But then at some point, Google changed how they were rewarding searches.
This would have been like 2011, a year after. So then 2012, we started to scale it. And a couple months, maybe April of 2012, I realized we needed a brand that could encompass all of the different repairs we could do. iPhones, iPads, future smartphones that would be released. I couldn't be so tied to just iPads. So I came up with a new brand called iHeartRepair.com and started kind of pushing that. But I would have never got rid of iPad screen repair because it was getting all this free traffic from Google. But in I think it was October of 2013, so just over a year and a half ago, it was when we felt it. I don't know when they released the exact match domain update, but basically Google said...
September 2012 was when Google's exact match domain changed.
All right, so they...
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
So they did.
Because it took me a while. Like, it wasn't until 2013 that it hit me.
All right. So it showed up a number of months after that.
And you know, part of it was based on what they considered low quality. So the quality score process was still being rolled out at the time. And this is still happening now. Google is still updating how they evaluate quality. So it may have been that you passed the quality screenings for a while, mm-hmm. and then eventually they said,
as they got more aggressive.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, well, and I wasn't publishing new blog content. I wasn't doing any of the smart things that I recommend to businesses now.
Right.
Because I was getting free Google traffic every day. Why change what you're doing if it's working?
Right. You know? So that brings us to this point. You stopped getting the free Google traffic. You had to change. So this is something, though, this is an important thing, I think, for businesses to understand that most any business will go through a number of periods of time, if they're a long-term business, in which they have to adapt to a changing environment. And sometimes that's a dramatically changing one. Sometimes it's just shifting sand a little bit, but there's always the need to adapt. And when you look back through history, you can see the companies that didn't adapt and they are no longer around. And the ones that did become the long-term good to great companies.
And this doesn't necessarily just have to do with technology.
I'm talking broad-based, period.
Exactly. Markets change, people change.
Absolutely. Competition changes.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Right.
Yep, exactly. All
right. These days it happens a lot faster, it seems, than it used to. But
It does. So then Google changes. Now pretty much your online business, the search results business, dried up.
It went from 300 visitors a day and, you know, 4 or 5 orders a day to like 1 or 2 orders a day and 150 visitors. Right. So when you start showing up, when you start showing up lower down on the page in the search results, people don't trust you as much.
Right.
It's an exponential drop in traffic.
So even though the traffic may only be half, their trust in your brand is quite a bit less than half.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we didn't convert.
So the value
of
the traffic is much less. So you clearly had to. You had to now adapt. And what did you do to adapt to this changing environment?
Well, first I freaked out.
Okay. That's
because,
a common thing.
By this point in time, I had 2 or 3 employees working with me. We were about 70% online and 30% local. And iHeartRepair.com was kind of our local brand just because it didn't rank like iPad Screen Repair did. But we were able to rank locally just from some few things that I had done and I knew about. But we were not ready to all of a sudden lose 70% of our business from iPad Screen Repair. And so I went and tried to learn everything that I hadn't learned and start to do all the things that I hadn't done that would have been right. And I should have kept up with the times and not just trusted that Google was going to continue sending me free traffic.
Yeah, you were riding a gravy train. Why is it ain't broke? Why fix it? So all of a sudden it broke.
Yeah. And I mean, all of a sudden it broke and I realized I have to come up with another way to market my business. And to me, the path of least resistance was grow the local side of the business and grow it fast.
And this is where people are actually physically dropping off devices instead of shipping them in.
Yeah.
Right. So this is now you're talking about a geographic, local,
targeted campaign.
Targeted campaign. What did you do then? What did you do to shift it to that? What was your methods? What were your methods in 2013. So not that long ago. What were your methods for shifting?
Well, I knew that if I was going to be building something new, I wanted it to be built under the bigger brand, iHeartRepair. Because what Google was doing when they did that exact match domain update is they were saying, we want websites like Amazon that have millions of pages or hundreds of thousands of pages, however many they have, to rank better than websites that have 4 pages, and it's all about this niche, and the homepage is not branded, it's about a search term. So they would rather send traffic to techcrunch.com/iPad Screen Repair than they would the actual domain iPadScreenRepair.com.
So to some degree, this was the death of the microsite.
Yes.
Where businesses used to do this. If you, even for local search, you used to build a little site that had something to do with one product or one service. Yep. And just focus, you know, some keywords on it and maybe do whatever you could to get it ranked. A lot of those have disappeared and businesses are having to realize, no, I got to fold all of that into one big site because that's where my Google traffic is really going to come from.
Yeah, that's where they've gone. And I have to say, I think it is better for the consumer, but it obviously hurt me. So then I built a campaign where, I mean, essentially I just started doing stuff. You know, based on what I was learning when I was doing research.
Stuff like what?
It wasn't a calculated campaign. I just learned and I just started doing new things. One of which, the first thing I did was build a local targeted AdWords campaign.
Okay.
And that AdWords campaign was just targeted to the markets that I was going after. But most people do AdWords wrong and they send all the traffic to their homepage. And you get a low quality score from Google, you pay more per click, and that's where you hear the horror stories of people spending thousands of dollars and getting two customers.
So wait a minute. Right. So let's talk about that, because I run into this a lot. People are really confused about this. Why wouldn't I want the traffic to go to my home page? Because that's where maybe some of our best stuff is.
Well, you got to think, when you're a business, you're targeting lots of different keywords from customers that have slightly different needs. And the more specific you can cater to their needs, the better Google will see you as being authoritative and you as being a big brand, like we said. So if you have landing pages for, let's take like tile cleaning Sarasota, you know, if you have your homepage, which is like carpet and tile cleaning, it'd be better to have, you know, your homepage be your brand, and then have a different page for carpet cleaning Sarasota, tile cleaning Sarasota, carpet cleaning Bradenton, tile cleaning Bradenton, and then do that for all of the different services that you have, because that's what people are actually searching for. And then you set up your campaigns to actually send traffic to those specific landing pages.
Because the people looking for tile cleaning couldn't care less about carpet cleaning. They don't want to know what process you use for carpet cleaning. They don't want to know what certifications you have. They really want to know, can you come clean my tile without screwing it up, and can I trust you?
Exactly.
And so that's why you would send tile traffic to a different page, even though it's the same company, than maybe where you'd send your carpet traffic.
Yeah. So specifically, what did you set up then for iHeart Repair?
I think it was something like $50 a day AdWords budget. Maybe we started at 25. I don't know. But we instantly saw results. We instantly saw, you know, our local traffic into the store double.
Okay.
So then we doubled our AdWords budget and created more campaigns for some of the other things. At the time, it was like iPad repair, city name, iPhone repair, city name, was how we built it out.
And so then that's no small thing to do. I mean, daily, it's not that big a deal when you think about $50, right? Or $25. But at $25, you're spending $750 a month on ads. And then if you decide to double that, you're at $1,500 a month. A lot of businesses aren't prepared to just suddenly go, I'm going to jump in and spend that kind of money. So what would you advise to somebody who says, I can't spend $25 a day? I need to spend less than that.
Well, I mean, you pick one keyword that you want to go after that you know are maybe some of your best customers, and maybe you aren't getting traffic from that for free from Google, or even if you are and you want to increase the traffic you're getting from Google for that search term, go after that one term and spend $5 a day on it.
And build a dedicated landing page
exactly. That
you measure your traffic specifically to that. Because that's another thing. It's a little daunting to say, well, I've got maybe 10 or 15 terms that I need to get traffic for. That means I have to build 10 or 15 landing pages, you know, so that's daunting too. So this is a great way to phase in. You start with one keyword, one landing page, and grow from there.
Yeah, prove that the concept works. The other key element is you have to be able to measure. I didn't measure properly in the beginning. I just started doing stuff, and it worked. I saw it create an instant, you know, measurable change in our bottom line and what the money
people are coming in. It's working.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. But today you can actually manage it by campaign and by keyword and see what's actually converting into phone calls or forms filled out on your website. And there's a lot of technology that goes into that, but the power in knowing and understanding your online strategy and what's working and what dollar is actually producing results is, I mean, it's truly, there's nothing else out there like it. And it's incredibly powerful.
So after you get the Google AdWords, that's working for you. You get your various landing pages based on the keywords. What comes next then?
Well, I also hired an SEO company, which was a mistake. They produced very little results in 6 months, and we spent over $6,000.
So that was a lesson learned there.
Yeah. And, you know, I think they produced a few links to our website, but they weren't authoritative links from things that really, really mattered. But around the same time, I knew that blogging was incredibly important, regular blogging. So we started, I started paying writers to come in and write for our iHeartRepair.com website and for the iPadScreenRepair.com, because I hadn't forgot about it. I knew we needed to keep investing in that as well. So we did. We started blogging regularly, linking to those landing pages in those blogs. It wasn't amazing content. It really wasn't. But it was content nonetheless. It was better than nothing. And Google started to kind of reward us for that over time. And we started growing our campaigns. Then I started doing repairs for free for bloggers. in exchange for a review. And this is something not very many people do, and it takes a lot of work managing the bloggers, because they have an editorial calendar and fitting you in and, you know, making sure it gets written on time and tracking all of that. It's a hassle, but for me, I knew that it would make a difference. And over time it did. And I gave them all coupon codes because we were also an e-commerce site, and you know, their customers, their people they referred got a special deal when they came and checked out through the website. And it didn't absolutely change our business, but it was one of the things that made up our growth.
So let's talk about why that worked. So there's the side you just mentioned, which is, all right, the blog in question has traffic. So it's getting visitors. Those visitors learn about your business from the blog post. They click through, use the coupon code. You can measure that.
Yeah.
So you know which blog these customers are coming from, even if you didn't have analytics installed, just by the coupon code. So there's that side of it. But why would you focus on giving free stuff to bloggers aside from that?
You're getting links, you're getting SEO value.
But you're getting good quality ones, right? These are not the crap ones that the SEO company was getting you, you know, by placing.
These are real people actually going, you know, an SEO company is going to go post you somewhere on the web where nobody's at, because those are the links that are easy to get. You want to get links where there are actually people at.
And people that are specifically in your target audience.
That's helpful, but it doesn't have to be. Like, these bloggers weren't in my target audience. You know, they were coupon blogs, a lot of them. So it made sense for me to have a coupon on there. But what was important was the post title. Mm-hmm. What they wrote about was iPhone repairs or iPad repairs. And then they mentioned our brand name, and then they linked to our homepage. No special like keyword. I didn't tell them what to do with keywords. I just asked for one link to our page and then say the coupon code. I totally let them write what they wanted to write, even if it was bad.
So that
was
fine. And you found that to be of excellent value for you for trade, for repair.
Yeah, it was a real hassle to manage. So I kind of stopped doing it after a couple of months and focused in some other areas that I felt brought quicker results. But it was a long-term strategy that if I would have continued with, would have helped our overall ranking in Google, and who knows how many people would have used those coupon codes over time.
So that's, I just want to jump in because it's a strategy that we've taught our clients over the years to ask for anchor text based links with keywords in the anchor text. And we talked about this a little bit before, but that is actually less a good idea now. In fact, it could even be, if you get a lot of, for example, if the links coming to your site said iPad screen repair in them, eventually that could hurt you. It'd be better if the links just said iHeartRepair, which was your brand name.
Yeah, and I didn't tell people don't use keyword. I just didn't tell them anything and let them link how they wanted to.
Yeah, let it happen organically.
Because Google expects you to have a variety of different anchor text words.
It's the mixture, right?
Yeah.
Yep, good. Okay, super. I just thought I'd derail the conversation by asking a technical question.
Yeah, I mean, we ended up growing the business and it completely flipped. We ended up doing like 70% local and 30% ship-ins. The ship-ins eventually recovered and actually started doing, they were never as good as they were before, but maybe 60, 70% of the way there.
Okay.
Just because of some of the things we did. We improved the user experience, changed pricing, made things easier, brought a better warranty on, you know, tried to create more value because we were all of a sudden had to be more competitive. And so we were.
And so you eventually got to the point where you ended up selling the company, and you had grown it by that point to much larger than it had been before Google changed the rules on you.
Yeah, we grew it quite a bit in 2013. I want to say like probably 20%. We weren't as profitable because I was focusing some of the principles in the book, The E-Myth, and you know, building a business that you don't work in, but you work on. And you know, hiring people, developing systems in such a way. And I didn't get it to perfection where it needed to be, but it was quite a bit better. And I was able to enjoy being a business owner quite a bit more. I wasn't making as much money, but I was spending more time with my family. We bought a house during that point in time. And it was a little bit more on autopilot, if that makes sense. And then in 2014, we started doing refurbs. We started buying in bulk and doing some other things. We started networking with business clients a little bit. We barely tapped into it, just barely started touching it. And then I realized that, you know, maybe this wasn't the industry I wanted to be in forever. I became so interested in the online side of things and what I had done to build locally and online that I was becoming obsessed with it and spending so much time on that that I wasn't doing a very good job operationally, you know, meeting the needs of my team members. And we had some really good team members in there. So I knew we needed to find somebody that was ready to take it to the next level and scale the business. I knew that I was not the one to do it. And it was a hard moment to realize that, because it was my baby.
Right.
You know?
And by scale of business, you're talking about expanding it in the form in which it was roughly.
Right. And I knew that long term to build a ship-in repair company was going to be so hard to build it massive because there's so many local companies popping up in my particular niche all over the country. It's becoming less and less of a necessity, the ship-in side of things. So I knew to really grow it and scale it, I would have to be the one opening up new businesses and new markets. And to me, that just wasn't the type of easily scalable business I wanted to build. But that's just my...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people love that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Some that's people, and probably you found somebody who did want to do that, and that's who you sold it to.
That's exactly. And that was their strength, is right. The operational side. And that was not mine.
I think a lot of people listening can appreciate the value of having a business that's so systemized that it more or less runs on autopilot.
Yeah.
And it's one of those magical things when it happens. There's no magic to it, right? It's a lot of hard work to build systems and make it work.
Yeah. Tom was talking about that last week.
Yes, he was.
Last week's episode.
Yeah. In fact, Tom and with their small business coaching with Ziegler. Yeah. Tom Ziegler on last week's show. Great show, by the way. If you haven't heard it, you need to hear it. But one of the things that they do, within the coaching for Ziegler, is they help businesses do the systemization, and they read The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, powerful book, and they work on that. But the guys who are thinking, and gals who are thinking, like, hey, I want to get rid of this business. It's so bad, you know. It's I'm chained to it all the time.
Yeah.
You need to systemize it. In fact, systemize it as though you're planning on selling it.
Exactly.
And then keep it. You know.
Yeah.
Or go do something different that you enjoy doing, which is what you're
right.
Which is what you're doing. Congratulations, by the way, on doing that and selling.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome.
And it ended up selling very quickly. We waited a couple months to list it because we were doing some things to grow the business.
How'd you sell it?
And we got in contact with a broker through a friend of a friend. You know, I used my network because I didn't really trust just going to a random broker.
Right.
I wanted to.
You didn't run a Google search.
No, that was one thing I didn't want to find on Google. And it was someone I trusted, and there were several other people that validated that he was someone I could trust. And it was actually his first time doing a business broker deal. He'd been on my side of the transaction twice.
Okay.
And gave me some advice, you know, hooked me into the E-Myth book, which I was already doing most of those principles, but helped me kind of do the last couple of things that would get my business ready for sale. And so we listed it, and they did a fantastic job. And within a week, we had an offer that we accepted. And
wow.
Yeah. I mean, it took 90 days to close because of the SBA loan process.
Okay.
And that was a really long kind of arduous process. But yeah, we ended up closing, but we worked into the deal where I'm actually helping. I continue to help iHeartRepair with their online marketing and helping them go to the next level with that. But it's really cool because I'm able to focus on it now.
That's awesome. And you're just doing the part of the business that you enjoyed, and you're able to do similar things for other businesses today.
Right. And hence the podcast that we're on today.
I know. It's good. It's good. So I think this, by the way, great story. I'm enjoying, every time I talk with you about this, I pick up some new detail that I didn't know before. So it's kind of fun. But I also think it would be beneficial to listeners today if we did sort of a lightning round of what are the things that your website should have going on today and that you should be doing from a marketing, SEO, gaining new free traffic or even paid traffic. You know, what are the things that businesses should be doing? So while we shift gears into that, I'll mention this. You were talking about AdWords a little bit earlier. One of the things you mentioned was even advertising on your own brand name, which a lot of businesses don't see as a valuable thing to do. But what's interesting is that when you, even if you rank number one for your brand, which hopefully you do, right? But even if you rank number one in Google search for your brand, if you will run an ad campaign on your brand name, you'll be surprised at how much more traffic you get.
Yeah.
It is surprising. I mean, it's not going to double. If it doubles, there's a problem somewhere. But you'll be surprised. And if your website is converting pretty well, then that could be a really profitable thing to do. It's an incrementally profitable thing to do, but it's worth testing at least.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think people who are searching for your brand name already know about you, probably already have a good recommendation for you. And those are some of the hottest prospects. So to get in front of them right at the very top with an ad and maybe even feature an ad extension that allows them to call right from the search results, you can get some really good results out of that.
Yep. And it's highly trackable, highly measurable. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was going to ask you had to do with measuring the foot traffic. So when you started doing AdWords for iHeartRepair and now all of a sudden you're seeing people coming in, what did you do to sort of quantify which of your campaigns or keywords was resulting in actual feet, you know, walking in. Did you do something to kind of do any sort of lead gen on the website that translated into a face-to-face visit? Or was there anything measurable that you could point to that, that helped you analyze your AdWords and foot traffic correlation?
Yeah, I didn't do a very good job of it then. I know how to do it now the right way. You have to set up tracking code in Analytics that pushes data back to AdWords. And I know that sounds really, you know, because nobody's going to know exactly how to do that.
Yeah, it's a step-by-step process for that, of course.
I can help businesses do that if they need help with that.
So when someone walks through the door, though, to the business, I mean, what would you advise a business today that was thinking about
this? I mean,
this?
You can ask customers where they found you, and most of them will say online, and then you go, well, that doesn't mean anything because there's so many different ways people can find me online. So, you know, then you have to ask them specifically, and a lot of times they actually don't know.
They don't, and they'll be frustrated the further you drill down. So
exactly. Yeah. So you can't really, if you're a local business, you can't entirely tie, especially if they're coming into you. But what you can track are phone numbers and forms filled out, or email subscribers, and what campaign they came from. And if you know, for example, that one of your campaigns produces more calls than any of the others, then that would be a good campaign to increase the budget on, and perhaps look at, you know, decreasing the budget in other areas.
Sure.
So, but, you know, again, most businesses don't have that set up properly, and it takes a good amount of technology to do it, right? But I would measure phone calls, and then it's up to you to convert those phone calls. So think of your website as a lead generator, and then the people answering the phone as a lead closer or a sales staff or however. And your close rate obviously determines how valuable those leads are.
All right. Good stuff. All right.
Excellent.
So let's talk about what are the things that are required today right now to get a website performing well?
Yeah, lightning round here. Let's do this real quick. 60% of web traffic now comes from mobile devices. That might even be higher now. I'm not sure.
That's going up almost daily.
And it will vary from industry to industry.
Yes, but the trend is not going the other way.
Right. So in no industry is it going down.
Exactly.
Truly.
So use responsive web design. You have to have a theme that's responsive. Google will actually reward you SEO-wise if you do that.
It's true.
Secure your site with HTTPS. That's something they recently implemented that gives you a little bit of a ranking boost. It's not a huge factor yet, but it will become in the future. So I try to focus on things that will increasingly add value in the future as the algorithm changes.
Get an SSL certificate or use a service.
Yeah, if you aren't collecting credit card data, you can actually use Cloudflare, which is a free service. And it takes some configuration to get it working properly, but you can have SSL for free. And yeah, I mean, you don't want to use it if you're collecting credit cards, but if it's just a lead gen site where people then come in and purchase in person and you don't charge them over the via the web,
yep,
you can use a Cloudflare. It's called a flexible SSL certificate.
Awesome.
And then the other things, you have to connect your site to Google My Business, which is also kind of merged with Google Plus. You tell Google where your service area is. You do a couple other things, let them know what type of business you're in. And that's incredibly important. Then you have to link that to your website. And it's probably one of the first steps you should do to let Google know that you exist.
And this is true even if you don't run a localized business where you're selling to a local market.
Yeah.
You want to connect Google My Business. And this is also roughly the current version of Google's old map listings. But if you think back to when Google allowed you to update your own map listing, this is kind of that. Google Places, then it became Google Plus, now it's Google My Business.
Yeah.
They sort of given you one home on the web. But what's nice about it is you can tie your Google Plus page, all your listings, and your YouTube channel can all be tied into one login. You can give your staff admin privileges, a lot of like letting them manage your Facebook page and all that sort of stuff. So it allows you to really do a lot of stuff in one place.
Well, and use the same Gmail account that you use for your analytics when you get that set up for your site and for Webmaster Tools, and you'll actually get a whole bunch of data in Google My Business about how many times your local listing is being displayed, how many times your website homepage is being displayed,
clicks,
all this really cool stuff.
You get traffic information, and you should also use the same account for AdWords if at all possible so that all of those are easily connected to one another.
So for in the lightning round here, what about having a Facebook page for your business? How important?
Absolutely. If your customers are on Facebook, that's great.
So and that means yes.
Most yes, they are, right?
Yeah. I mean, in other words, that's you. Do you sell to people? Yes. Okay, then you need to be on Facebook.
Yeah. Right. And I would challenge you that if actually spending ad money on Facebook works.
It does.
And you can get so targeted with Facebook.
It's stunning how targeted.
Your ideal customer and start to target them.
Yep.
So I would encourage you not to just build a Facebook page and just post kind of random content on there and get mediocre, if at all, results, but set up your web page and then actually do ads. And we've talked about this before. You don't just do the boost post button. You need
to set up the easy version. Right?
Yeah, you need to set up a campaign and do it right.
We need to do a show on Facebook and Facebook ads and, mm-hmm. and talk about the pages, because it's actually changing. One of the things that Facebook just rolled out is a new relevance score on ads. So they're actually quantifying how relevant they believe the ad that you just created will be for your audience. And that will affect, it's a lot like Google's quality score, which is worked into AdWords.
But they actually tell you what it is.
But they tell you what it is. And it's been there. In other words, this has been running under the hood for a while. It's been affecting your ads and their effectiveness. But now they're telling you more about it.
You disclosed it.
Yes.
Nice.
It's really, really, really helpful.
Come on, Google. Pay attention.
You got to know what you're doing with it, though. So, yeah. You know, it's definitely worth doing. So, Facebook page, yes. You mentioned Webmaster Tools. Let's talk about a couple of things you need to do inside of Webmaster Tools for a business that's never used it before.
Yeah, I mean, you got to link it to analytics so that you can get some data between the two.
Just to clarify, this is a Google product. You just go to google.com/webmaster.
I really wish they would just have analytics and Webmaster Tools be the same product. I have no idea why it's two still.
Right, but they have allowed you now to add users to your Webmaster Tools account. It used to be that you could only have one Gmail address or one Google account associated with it, but now you can associate multiple, so you don't have to have just one login to monitor it.
Right.
So with Webmaster Tools, one of the things that we encourage people to do is XML sitemaps, which there's a WordPress plugin that will help you generate those. There are numerous of them, actually, but the WordPress SEO plugin by Yoast will do it, and it's nicely done.
Yeah, I highly recommend that plugin.
You want to test and submit your sitemaps through Google Webmaster Tools. Also, look in there occasionally. It will tell you what search queries you're showing up for, which is one of the pieces of data it sends to analytics for you, so they talk back and forth. But it will also tell you about manual penalties
if you have any.
So if you've been submitting, or you ever hired an SEO company to submit links or create links back to your site, you may be subject to a manual penalty. If you notice your Google traffic dropping, you definitely need to jump in there and look.
Yeah. I mean, it's an important piece of things. Once you set it up, you really don't actually have to go in there very much, because it pushes most of the important data to analytics. But you do need to set it up properly in the beginning. It's one of the first steps right there with setting it up in Google My Business. This goes without saying, but we should still say it. Use a CMS with an integrated blog. So you have to have, we talk about blogs here and how important it is. If you have a website or a web designer who's building your website that doesn't have a blog integrated in it, cancel the project immediately. Either work with them and get a blog installed, or find somebody else. So you got to have it.
Right. That was one of the, I was going to ask about in the lightning round also, was the using a blog as a one form of a content marketing, where you're pushing out a valuable content for potential customers and others that they get for free. They can just read it however they get it. They can get it for free. It establishes credibility for you. Perhaps along the way, you can grab some emails of people who would be potential customers, start building an email list, because the importance of an email list, it's all attached to everything we're talking about here. And blogging is an excellent method for doing that. Yeah. All you have to do is do it regularly.
Yep. And capturing emails. We did a show with ActiveCampaign a couple of episodes ago. So that's one of the products you can use.
Episode 5.
Yep. It's worth hearing. But there are lots of tools out there. I mean, you could even use Constant Contact, although that's the last one I recommend these days. AWeber, Infusionsoft is, you know, more the expensive end. ActiveCampaign was a great option. That was a fun show. All right. So what else from a techie standpoint, website stuff?
Well, and we've said this already in the episode, but you have to have conversion tracking set up these days. Because you really want to be able to measure, let's say you've got a Facebook ad, you want to measure that Facebook ad or any other social media ad to your AdWords ads, then to your SEO traffic, the natural free traffic you're getting from Google, and see which is converting into customers the best, which is converting into phone calls or email forms filled out. Incredibly important. That's how you feel in control of your online marketing, and like you actually have a say in the results.
And this goes beyond just installing the Google Analytics code on your site.
Yeah. It doesn't
now you have to do event tracking. You want to set up some mechanism that knows, for example, when someone clicks to call from your website, because that happens a lot now. We tap on smartphones on phone numbers, and that's trackable. It's measurable. You can identify that.
Well, and I actually have some tools too, where even if they use a landline, we can track it. There's some really cool software out there that integrates with analytics and Google AdWords to track it in an amazing way. That's one of the most exciting things that I'm I'm all jazzed up about here. And then you got to create a user sitemap too. Not just an XML sitemap for the search engines, but a user sitemap. Google will also see that as, oh, they're helping the users out. Just little small things that once you set them up, you don't have to worry about them. You can then focus on your overall strategy. But when you first set up your site, you need to.
Especially if you're using a content management system. If you have a site that doesn't allow you to manage content, then your sitemap's going to be have to be updated manually. And that's a royal pain.
Yeah.
That in and of itself is a reason to use a good content management system. All right, I'm going to hit you with a couple of other ones. These are some of the recommendations we're making. If you are converting to a WordPress site or another content management system, you need to also take advantage of some of the free stuff that's out there. For example, with WordPress, all of the services that are offered on WordPress.com are available to you if you're using a self-hosted WordPress site, meaning you're using the software from WordPress.org. So there's a single plugin called Jetpack you can use to connect up your WordPress site to the WordPress.com setup, and that allows you to get some free measurement on your traffic. So it's separate from Google Analytics, and it's a little bit easier to use. It's easier to just jump into your site and see. But you also can do things like connect it up so that it auto-posts. When you publish a new blog post on your site, it'll automatically post to your Facebook page, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+. I mean, it kind of eliminates some work, and there are lots of other features that are available for you there, including spam filtering for your comments. You know, anything you put out on the web is going to get spam. And anybody who's ever run a WordPress site, I kind of call it a badge of honor. When you first start getting your spam comments, it's like, hey, now you're showing up in search.
Yeah, SEO is working for
Congratulations, you know. But do something about that, because you're going to get bombarded with crap, and you know, 99.8% of all comments are spam. So Akismet is a tool that is available through WordPress.com. You can get that with Jetpack. There's another component, especially when you're converting a site. So we've seen this a lot over the last few years. People are converting over from either one content management system to another, or they're converting from an old site where there was a lot of HTML files with weird URLs, and now you've got similar content, but it's in a content management system. You need to keep track of your 404 errors. So we all hate it when you go to a link and you find that you've reached a page that doesn't exist anymore. A lot of times when you make a conversion like this, you do have the page you could be showing visitors. They're just not finding it. So we use a plugin called Redirection, which is a WordPress plugin. It puts a 301 redirect on every URL that has changed. And so it's a little bit of work to set it up, but once you do that, that way you keep your Google rankings on specific deep URLs. And that plugin will also track 404 errors for you specifically, so that you can see when you've got a page that people are hitting, but you don't have content for it, you can map them to. We just did this week with a client. They had some incoming links on some old URLs, and those incoming links weren't doing them any good because they were hitting 404 errors. We found them in Webmaster Tools.
Yep.
We set up the redirect plugin, put in some redirects, and suddenly those links are valuable to them again. And there were some good links in there that were from bloggers that had written about their product, but they were not getting the benefit out of it because Google was saying, hey, this 404 error is a bad experience for visitors. So that's a fun plugin. Another thing you should do is edit your 404 page. You know, a lot of times...
Oh, now you're getting deep.
When people have a 404 page on their site, it's usually like, hey, this isn't here.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you like to capture that traffic? You know, redirect them to something, not redirect them like with the 301, but show them some valuable content, give them a search button so they can find what they came for.
What plugin do you use for that?
I actually don't use a plugin for this. A lot of times we do editing on the pages themselves. Like, for example, we have a pest control company we've talked about a few times. We set up their 404 error page to say, uh-oh, there's a bug, you know, because it's pest control. And then we give people links to the most popular content on the site, including some of the services and a search bar.
Nice.
I've actually seen people show the least popular content on their website on the 404 pages to actually increase the rank on those.
Well, that's kind of an interesting idea.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And then you can also have a sense of humor with it. You know, like there's one that's got a stormtrooper on it and he says, this is not the page you're looking for. I mean, there's all kinds of things. This is a chance for you to show off.
I like the one with, uh-oh, there's a bug. I mean, and especially if you have a little insect on the page.
Which we don't. Something. We need to add that.
Yeah.
A video of an insect. That'd be better.
Be
or like an animated GIF.
Yeah. Crawling across the page.
What are you doing for site speed these days, Josh?
I use Cloudflare to really... It does a whole bunch of stuff in the back end. I just do it. There's a button that you click. It's like fully optimized. and I click it and
enhance.
Yeah, it does a whole bunch of stuff like minification of the CSS and caching and resource allocation, all that kind of stuff. And it just does it automatically. It can speed up your site. So, and they also provide SSL.
Yeah, it's good stuff. The site Cloudflare speed is important now because it is a ranking factor. Google will rank, all things being equal, a site that performs in a faster way for visitors ahead of one that doesn't. So
yeah, there's a tool called Pingdom.
Yep.
Pingdom, and it does a web page, and you want your pages to load in under 2 seconds. If it's over two, you need to either get a new host, set up Cloudflare, do some other things to set up your site.
Otherwise, fire your web company, you know, whatever the case is.
Yeah, you could be getting penalized.
We'll be putting a lot of stuff in the show notes today, including Pingdom, The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, some of these things that we've covered.
Yep.
There's been a lot of information here today. Rod, you got anything else for Josh?
No, we covered it.
Oh, I got to mention too, when we finally set up a new site for e-commerce, the best tool I found, if you're serious about e-commerce online, it's a little bit more expensive, is Shopify. It's way more robust than WordPress, comes with hosting installed. They've got payment solutions. They've got tons of add-ons that you can do to create like upsells right before they check out, coupon codes for people who share your stuff, tons of cool viral loops and growth hacking stuff, which is like taking things to a whole nother level. So if you're interested in e-commerce, you know, that's a separate conversation to have, but Shopify, I highly recommend.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we've covered a lot of ground today. Hopefully you have questions. If you don't have questions, then either we're not doing our job correctly or you're already an expert and we should have you as a guest. So
yeah, either way, get in touch.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to hear from you. We appreciate you listening. And we've got a lot more great stuff to be covering. We've got some exciting guests coming up. I'll keep the wraps on that at the moment. But some exciting guests coming up we're really excited about. And every week we provide a new show for you with content that you can use right away to grow your business. That is what this show is all about. We're excited to have you listening, and I invite you to please come by our website. You can find today's episode at thegrowthshow.com/007. Today's 007. And that's where you'll find all the notes for today's show. There's a place for you to leave comments, ask questions, get in touch. We'd love to have you tweet and otherwise communicate with us. I think a Facebook page is in the works, but we don't have it set up yet. So we'll be eating our own dog food here pretty soon, so to speak. But we're excited to have you listening, and we hope to have you join us next week for more good stuff to grow your business right here.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.